Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go,
Al Snow,
Al Snow,
Al Snow!
It's business time, baby.
The Solar Monster sounds off.
My client!
Mama Monster!
Conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat! Delete!
You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
It's the 2017 Sound Off Christmas Show. I am Santa Solomonster. It is Christmas Eve, December 24th, 2017. May you all get Adam Cole in your stocking and not Michael Cole. Have a good lineup plan here for this week. Hope everybody's having a great holiday weekend, an extended holiday weekend. Those are always the best ones. And it is the second to last Sound Off of 2017. We got one more to go after this, so not a whole lot of time left in the month of December. If you want to take advantage of our Audible trial, my Christmas gift to all of you, audibletrial.com/solomonster. I give you the gift of a free audiobook with your trial. Just punch in that URL, sign up, and you get one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what, even if you cash out before your trial is up. So audibletrial.com/solomonster. Tons of books on there, lots of wrestling books. Definitely unwrap that gift this week using our link. Also, if you want to become a PayPal VIP and support the show, you can do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. As always, $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the show. These are all my little elves this week who supported the show. I call them elves. I'm sure 80% of the people on this list are probably taller and bigger than I am. But thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Out of Control Cody Thomas, the Florida Freebird Bryant Becerra, Raymond the Mountie Medina, Massgrave Micah Harshaw, the Marietta Mahler, Alexandru Mata, Luis Hercules Hernandez, Aim for the Head, Andrew Jorlog, Jerome, You're Going Down, Eugenio, The Show Off, Corey Van Dam, Alvin Chainsaw Siegerts, The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard, The Malaysian Mastermind, Samuel T, The Belgian Brute, Nicholas Overmeer, Max the Axe Velado, John, More Money, More Problems, Morin, Capital Carnage, Christian Reyes, who is doing better, by the way. I mentioned him last week. He was in the hospital for a bit. He is doing better now, I'm happy to report. Chris Killswitch Kukler, Faith Hard Knocks Harvey, the Alpha Male, Alex Vela, and JD from New York, who wants his girlfriend Lola to know that he will be her rock and will love her and be by her side every step of the way with her new job. And you can, of course, check out JD's content on YouTube at JD from New York, or at JD from NY, I should say. 206 is his handle on YouTube, so thank him for the support as well. It's 1 week left. If you want to get a shout-out on next week's show, it is the final sound-off of the year. That PayPal button is always right there on the right-hand side of the page on thesolomonster.com. Final roll call of the year next week. So you all know, the plan for next week's show, before I go any further here, the plan is for the New Year's Eve show, and yes, I am doing a show on New Year's Eve, I am doing one on Christmas Eve, how can I not do one on New Year's Eve? The plan is to do my top 10 WWE matches of 2017, we'll have a little look back at some of the biggest moments, biggest stories of the year, also a preview for Wrestle Kingdom 12, which I'm very much looking forward to. In fact, my working plan is, I have the entire day cleared, January 4th, I'm going to be watching Wrestle Kingdom, not live, but I'll watch it after I wake up that morning, and be doing a Sound Off Extra review, exclusively for Wrestle Kingdom 12, that'll go up on the YouTube channel later that day. So that is the plan, I am in full Wrestle Kingdom mode, we'll have a preview on the podcast next week, so that's going to be a packed show, and then the following week, which is the first show of 2018, will be the annual prediction show. And both podcasts will have all the usual top stories and show reviews and mailbag Q&A. So that's the working plan as of right now. A lot to look forward to over the next 2 weeks, plus Wrestle Kingdom. My TV Tracks mailbag, which was supposed to go up a long time ago, was a bit delayed, finally went up this week. up on the TV Tracks channel on YouTube. Over 90 minutes I recorded talking tag teams and where the current tag team scene in WWE ranks all time compared to some of the other tag team eras. Pinpointing when fans started to turn on Roman Reigns and why I think WWE is to blame for it. Could Meng, the former Haku, have succeeded with the Goldberg push in WCW? If Meng was the one to get that undefeated streak and that big push, could he have had the same success that Goldberg had in WCW? I talk about that. And also, what character I would portray if I joined Lucha Underground. Somebody wanted to know, hey, what character would you play if you ever, you know, joined the show? And I talk about all of that. I've got a character in mind. So a lot of good stuff on that Q&A. Check it out. It's up on Trax's channel right now. You get a bonus sound off. That's my Christmas gift to all of you. Shout out to Zach House of Pain Hulker. For the fifth year in a row, he is hosting our annual Royal Rumble pool in our private Facebook group. It is free to participate. There will be prizes involved for the winners. So if you would like to donate a prize, we had a few people donate prizes last year. Let me or Zach know, but you are going to be responsible for that. Just be aware of that. I want nothing to do with that. If you want to offer something tangible, then by all means, we're open to suggestions, but you will be responsible for sending it to whoever the winners are. We usually have first, second, and third place winners in this thing. You'll find the post from Zach pinned to the top of the group page. I had to unpin it temporarily to post something else up, but later today I'll pin that back up. Otherwise, you could just search the group. Type in Zach Hulker, H-O-L-K-E-R, and you'll see the post come up. To enter the Rumble pool this year, it's very simple. All you need to do, once you find Zach's post with all the rules and everything, all you need to do is like the post. That's it. You don't have to leave a comment. All you need to do is hit the like button, the thumbs up, whatever it is, and you're in. A week before the Rumble pay-per-view, that's Saturday, which is January 20th, numbers will be assigned to everybody. You can still sign up even after that date. The deadline to sign up and be part of this thing is going to be up until a few hours, really, before the pay-per-view. But if you're wondering when you are going to get your number, you know, which number did I draw, 1 through 30, not until the 20th. If you win your pool, this is how it works. So if you win your pool, meaning the person who wins this year's men's Royal Rumble match enters at, let's say, your number. You draw number 17. Let's say in the men's Rumble this year, number 17 wins it all. You win your pool. You then move on to the Ultimate Rumble pool with all the other people who drew that number, because there's going to be dozens of pools here, not just one. You move on to the ultimate final Rumble pool, and then I draw three names randomly. And we will announce first, second, and third place winners. So that's it. Those are the rules. Let me be clear. This is only for the traditional men's Rumble match. I'd love to do the women, but it would just complicate things. Last year was beyond insane. Just to show you the kind of beast that this whole thing has turned into over the last 5 years. Year one, we had five pools with 150 sound-off fans, which is pretty respectable. It's 150 people, right? Year two, we were up to 15 pools with 450 people. Third year was 23 pools with 690 people. And then last year, it got on that ginger juice, I guess, and it exploded to 73 pools and almost 2,200 people, which is a record. Last I checked, we're already almost halfway there. And it's not even January. We already have over 1,000 people signed up. Zach only got the post up about, 4 or 5 days ago, I think? And this is the first time I'm even plugging this contest on the air. We already have over 1,000 people signed up. So if you're not already signed up, if you didn't like the post, find it in the Facebook group, like it, and you are in. It's always fun to be part. I'm part of it, too. I can't win any of the prizes, obviously. Because that would be unfair, but I usually throw my name in the hat anyway. I remember one year I was very upset. I drew number 19, I think it was, and I got gold dust. And see, this is why I don't play fantasy sports. I feel like if I was a big football fan, I feel like being a fantasy football fan would just kill all of the enjoyment for me, because all I would be focused on are my players. I feel like that would just ruin the whole experience. So here in the Rumble, I find myself waiting for my number to be drawn, and it's very stressful. There is a Sound Off Extra review up on our YouTube channel. For those who don't know, Clash of Champions was last weekend. I reviewed the entire pay-per-view. Thank you to the roughly 50,000 of you who have already listened and watched the review. I wasn't sure it would even hit that number, to be honest with you. My TLC review did 136,000 views. My Survivor Series review did 115,000 views. So that tells you right there the level of interest that there was in this show, that I could barely scrape 50,000 with this show. Really not a whole lot of enthusiasm for it. Now, I called it an unenthusiastic thumbs up. That's how I described it in my review. I gave it a thumbs up, but kind of a weak thumbs up. I thought the opening two matches for the U.S. title and the tag team titles were the highlight of the show. The main events were disappointing. Final Twitter poll results, over 2,500 of you voted. 61% of you said thumbs up. 39% of you gave it the Batista thumbs down. The end of the Maharaja era. Perhaps. Hopefully. We had AJ Styles beating Jinder Mahal to retain the WWE Championship, which you always worry that they're going to try to swerve you at the very last minute. I would not have considered that a positive swerve. Thankfully, they didn't. AJ retained the title. And hopefully, that is the end of Jinder Mahal muddying up these pay-per-view main event matches. I just don't think the guy is cut out for it. Hopefully, he continues to find much success on SmackDown. But I just don't see him being at an elite level as compared to some of the other guys they have. They have a lot of talent. They have an incredible amount of talent on that roster really, in my opinion, I mean, belongs in the main event picture, especially going into WrestleMania. Jinder is not at the top of that list. He had his run, he had his chance, and hopefully in 2018 we can move on from that. Question now is, where does AJ Styles go? Obviously, he's going to have an opponent, a challenger at the Royal Rumble. My thought, as I mentioned, in my review, Randy Orton would seem to make the most sense. Orton is not going to be around much in the first half of next year. He's taking a lot of time off, but he is scheduled for the Rumble. So they could do a one-off with him and Styles, give AJ a win on the way to WrestleMania. Orton, he's living the life right now. You know, he's growing his hair back in. You notice that? It's kind of weird. There was a note I saw in the Observer this week that said he gets a lot of house show weekends off and he still makes millions of dollars per year. Millions, plural. Millions of dollars a year. It's not a bad gig. Hopefully he won't have to ride a giant sperm to the ring at WrestleMania next year like he did this year. It was supposed to look like a snake. It looked like a sperm instead. I know he wasn't too happy about that. Somebody in our Facebook group, as an alternate idea, pitched Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn both as the next challengers and maybe doing a triple threat match with AJ at the Royal Rumble, with the dynamic being Owens and Zayn have been all buddy-buddy for months now. You know that's not going to last forever. It's only a matter of time who's going to turn on who. Maybe going into the match, they talk a lot about it as being a handicap match. There's going to be a new champion. It's just a matter of, you know, is it going to be you or me, Sammy? Sammy, I'll let you get the pin. And Sammy's like, oh, no, I'll let you get the pin. Yeah, that kind of stuff. And then going into the match, as soon as one guy goes for the win, the other breaks it up, and it just creates this dissension between them as the match progresses. That could happen, too. I could see either one of those ideas, either AJ and Orton or AJ doing the triple threat thing. The problem is, I think it would be a hell of a stretch to have Shane McMahon, who is the commissioner of SmackDown, sign off on giving them a championship match, given how much he hates them. But they could use it as a way to further the tension between him and Daniel Bryan. I thought the matches that AJ and Owens had this summer were underwhelming, but if you add Sami Zayn, if you add a third person in there to mix it up and make it a three-way, I think it could be great. You know, I remember the triple threat with Lesnar and Cena and Rollins from 2015. That was one of the best matches all year. So who's to say that this couldn't be match of the year caliber too? Look, I'm fine with either one, but I like the Orton match better. Those two have not had a proper pay-per-view match yet. They've had one TV match earlier this year. I'm still waiting on that springboard into an RKO spot. We almost got it, actually, in that first TV match. They did this great fake-out, if you remember, where AJ was going for the springboard, he was going for the phenomenal forearm, and Orton went and did the RKO, but he fell, and AJ stayed on the apron, and I thought that was a great spot. They were saving it for another day, and I think that day should be at the Royal Rumble, and then when they do the spot, we can get the last second kickout by AJ. I also want to introduce a new segment here to the show. This will be very similar to Sad Tweet in that you may not hear it every single week, right? Only when necessary. But it's a little something I like to call Kevin Dunn, what the hell was that?
Kevin Dunn, what the hell was that?
So you may have noticed these weird cameras at ringside during the Clash of Champions pay-per-view last weekend. I found myself sitting here saying, what the hell was that? When I first saw one of those cameras outside the ring on the floor during the tag team match. I think it was with Orton and Nakamura against Owens and Zayn. Apparently there was another one on the opposite side of the ring, and there were two other cameras on top of the ring posts. And according to Justin Labar, these were special cameras being used for virtual reality testing by WWE. They are exploring the possibility of offering the option of virtual reality views on their shows in the future, which actually sounds pretty cool. If you have, you know, access to even different camera angles, if it's only on the network, let's say, I don't know how they would do that on USA, but on the network, if they gave you the option to pick camera, you know, A, B, C, or D, I think that's very cool. I'm all for giving the fans options. You know, for instance, I'm still waiting on the option to mute the announcers during the pay-per-views and just having the ambient arena noise. I think they should work on that as their next big innovation. It looks like Vince McMahon is really serious about this XFL revival, or whatever it may end up being called. It may go by a different name. On Thursday, he sold $100 million worth of WWE stock to help fund his new Alpha Entertainment Company. The last time I heard Vince McMahon blew $100 million, his wife had two failed Senate bids. But now he's cashed in $100 million worth of stock to help fund this new company. Alpha Entertainment also filed five trademarks for the XFL name. And for those wondering, he still owns over 32 million shares of WWE stock, and that represents over 80% of the company's voting power, so he is still very much in control. Don't get too excited that he's cashing out all this stock. If you are one of these people who would like to see Vince McMahon go away or cede power in some way, it ain't happening anytime soon. Unfortunately for the stock, which was riding high, their stock was doing as good as it's ever done before. He did this at a time when the stock was up over $33 a share, as of Tuesday it was. And after the news broke of his selling over $100 million worth of stock, it dropped like a rock. And by the time trading ended on Friday, it was under $30 a share. $29.55, I believe, is where it is now. So Wall Street does not seem to think that Vince McMahon starting up a new football league is a good thing, even though WWE has made it clear that he's doing this with his own money, unlike the XFL thing last time. He's not taking money out of the company. This is his own money. They don't seem to care. Or maybe they just don't trust that if he does restart the XFL, that he won't at some point dip into company money to help fund this thing. Maybe they're having bad flashbacks to 2001. Still no confirmation or denial from WWE about an XFL return, or Vince himself, about an XFL return. They've been very mum on that. But I would have to think if it's going to continue to affect the stock, if let's say trading opens up this week and the stock goes down to $28, $27, $26, they're going to have to say something just to sort of stop the bleeding. One of the mailbag questions I got this week was from David, who wanted to know, you know, with all this talk lately about Bitcoin, and boy, did Bitcoin take a hit this week, although it's recovered from where it had been. I think it dropped something like 40% at one point this week. But David wanted to know my thoughts on WWE stock, and if I had the money, would I buy some? And I'll tell you what, I wouldn't buy right now, but I would keep an eye on it, because if it continues to fall in light of this XFL stuff, that probably would be a good time to go ahead and buy some. I think there's a good chance it drops a little bit more before it rebounds, but the stock is so unpredictable. The whole stock market is so unpredictable. But WWE stock is very weird, because it feels like whenever they have good news, whenever they have a good spell, you know, and it's sort of like some positive news in the company, the stock goes down. And then the stock goes up, but at weird times. So, you know, I'm just giving you my opinion. I'm not giving stock tips out here. If you're going to take stock tips from me, you're going to go bankrupt real quick. But if it were me, I think there's a chance the stock goes down a little bit more. I wouldn't buy right now. I'd wait. I'd wait it out a little bit. I checked Yahoo. I was curious to see how the stock had performed this year. When the year started, it was around $18 a share. In October, it was up to $22. And then, I don't know exactly why this happened, but it started to really climb after that, to where a week ago, it was about $33 a share. I would love to know exactly what it was that caused that kind of spike around November. But again, I wouldn't buy right now. I would wait things out and then see how it goes. It could be a good investment at that point. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday. It was live from Providence, Rhode Island. Over 2,000 votes. 37% thumbs up, 63% thumbs down. Ouch. You people like Clash of Champions a hell of a lot more than you like Raw. I don't know why. There was no Roman Reigns on the show this week. I think half of you should be dancing in the streets and throwing a party. He was given the week off. One of the two big stories coming out of the show this week was the injury to Dean Ambrose. Man, is this Shield reunion? Is this thing snake-bitten or what? First you get Roman, right? He gets the mumps. And Kurt Angle has to take his place. Now Ambrose is hurt, and he may be out for a while. So on TV, it was Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, and Jason Jordan against Samoa Joe, Sheamus, and Cesaro. And Rollins did a dive spot out to the floor, because of course he does. He took out Sheamus, he took out Cesaro, and he took out Ambrose. And Ambrose immediately started favoring his elbow, which already had a brace on it to begin with. This is not an injury that was caused during the match. He went into the show already injured. But they decided to turn the whole thing into an angle to explain his absence, which they had to know was coming. So Ambrose is tended to at ringside by a doctor, and he's keeping his arm close to his side. You know, they played it up very realistic. I made the comment, if you remember recently, it might have been on last week's show, I made a comment that I thought Ambrose was looking smaller. And that may be why. I don't know how long he's been nursing this injury for, if it's been a few days, if it's been a couple of weeks. But if his elbow was hurt, that would explain why he may not have been working on his upper body all that much. It's the upper body. He just seems a lot skinnier if you look at pictures of him. So Rollins then, he sees what happens. He's kind of concerned, but then he rolls back into the ring and he gets bro-kicked by Sheamus right in the face and pinned by Cesaro. Then later on backstage, Rollins and Ambrose are just sitting in a hallway. All of a sudden, Joe and Sheamus and Cesaro, they attack them again. Joe rams one of those equipment cases into Dean's arm to help explain the injury. Now, according to WWE.com, Ambrose underwent a 40-minute operation this week to repair a torn triceps muscle. This was in Birmingham. The doctor said he tore some of the distal triceps tendon where it attaches to the forearm bone. He tore about 50%. Of the triceps tendon away from the bone. He's already doing physical therapy. No timetable for his return. They've said nothing about how long this injury typically keeps somebody out for. I'm not at all familiar with this kind of injury, so I couldn't say if it's going to be an extended absence, if it's only going to be a few weeks. But he had surgery. So I would guess there's a pretty damn good chance he's out of the Rumble. Or it's very much touch and go as far as the Royal Rumble goes. The way they did the angle with Rollins being the one to hurt him on that dive, they could use that as a seed to build to a heel turn when Ambrose comes back. Not right away, but slowly build to one when he comes back. Maybe he blames Rollins for the injury. You know, we haven't really seen heel Ambrose since the early days of the Shield. And it didn't take very long even after the Shield came on the scene where the fans sort of turned them babyface, so our exposure in WWE to heel Dean Ambrose is very limited. We really haven't had a lot of it. And even then, I don't really think we truly saw what he's capable of as a heel. It may be time. You know, I have no faith in them turning Roman, and we've already seen Rollins play the part. But what about Ambrose? You know, what could a heel Dean Ambrose do in WWE? Now, I wouldn't do anything until after WrestleMania, assuming that he's able to come back before then. But I would save it for Mania, or maybe the night after Mania if they're going to do something. In fact, I've been thinking about who could make sense as a first challenger coming out of WrestleMania for Roman Reigns, assuming he wins the Universal title. Finn Balor still hasn't gotten his rematch for the Universal title, so he's a possibility. Braun Strowman, right? But we've already seen that match a whole bunch of times. I mean, they work very well together. I wouldn't mind seeing him wrestle at some point. But to go right back to Roman and Strowman, I don't know. It feels like it's too soon for that. Bray Wyatt, it's like, you know, don't make me laugh. But what about heel Ambrose? Especially if he's the one to break up the Shield this time around, Shield 2.0. I think it would be an interesting little twist on things with him being a fan favorite for so long. You know, there's times I go back, and I know some of you remember this. There's times I go back and I watch on YouTube, because the video is still up on YouTube. The video from the hotel lobby in 2012 of Ambrose confronting Mick Foley. I watch that video sometimes, and all you got to do is go into the search bar and type in Ambrose Foley Hotel. It'll be the first thing that comes up. And I watch that, and I wonder how things would have turned out had they gone all the way with that angle. So Ambrose was in FCW still at that time when they shot that thing. They were just—he was trying to come up with ideas and ways to try to get himself up on that main roster. And he pitched this idea for himself to, you know, again, finally get on TV. Look, I mean, I'm glad we got the Shield. I don't regret that at all. All's well that ends well. I would hate to go back in time and do something that would result in no Shield. But I thought it was an interesting story. Ambrose, he gets up in Foley's face. Foley's just walking through this hotel, and he may have been signing autographs. And Ambrose, like a fan, just walks up and starts badgering him. And he starts blaming Foley for influencing this entire generation of wrestlers. His generation of wrestlers. Influencing them to basically destroy their bodies just for the cheap pop. And Ambrose said, some of my friends are dead and their careers were over, and he blamed Foley for it. And Foley, you know, they're playing it off very realistically, and Foley's like, oh, so what, are they dead? Are your friends dead now? And things are getting really tense and really heated between them. And I remember Ambrose going on someone's podcast, it was one of the Podcast One shows, I think, and claiming that it was so real that even Mark Henry, when he saw it, he fell for it, and he wanted to beat him up. Because he probably didn't even know who Ambrose was. Ambrose was still in developmental at the time. And I know Henry's been a fan, you know, a friend of Foley's for so long. And he thought it was so real. He wanted to go beat Ambrose up. But then I guess Foley couldn't get medically cleared, and so they just nixed the whole angle. And then whatever it was, 8 months later, right? 9 months later, something like that, we had the Shield arrive on the scene. But I think controversial Dean Ambrose, I think that could be a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, remember the show, because this could have been the first seed planted in that story. Kurt Angle made it official. It will, in fact, be Brock Lesnar defending his Universal title at the Royal Rumble against both Braun Strowman and Kane. Kane knocked Braun out of the ring, and Lesnar went to lift up Kane for an F5, and he stumbled. It's very rare you see Brock Lesnar struggle as much as he struggled here in getting somebody up. I mean, there were a couple times in the last few years where he picked up Big Show, and he struggled a little bit. Actually, there was one, there was like a network special, I think, where we got Brock and Big Show, and I don't know if he might have dropped him or he almost dropped him. But again, it's rare that we see Brock stumble like this, but I don't know if Kane just didn't go up properly or what it was. It looked awful, but he got him up. He hit a very weak-looking F5 on him. I just think Lesnar and Kane, and I don't feel any differently. I feel as passionate about this now, having seen the two of them in the ring together here. Lesnar and Kane sounds like an absolutely horrible, horrible match. But hopefully having Strowman in there as the third guy, they can lay things out in a way that minimizes Kane's involvement. Other than eating the pin at the end of the match, which is the only outcome that makes sense in that match. Seth Rollins had a 20-minute match with Jason Jordan. I thought this was good stuff from these two. Rollins won with the knee. Yeah, they're still calling it the knee. Michael Cole is still calling this thing the knee. I can't believe they still have no name for this thing. It's been months now. I mean, I thought they were calling it the Kingslayer. I could have sworn they were calling it the Kingslayer at some point, but if they were, they're not anymore. So now it's just the knee again. Just call it the freaking knee or something, right? At least that would be kind of funny. They call him Seth freaking Rollins. So why not the freaking knee? That way when he hits it, we can hear Michael Cole on commentary squealing about how he hit the freaking knee. At least there would be some kind of a name for it. Finn Balor is still stuck wrestling Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel. Poor guy. The two of them got DQ'd when Dallas refused to leave the ring. They were ganging up on Balor. It's bad enough that Finn Balor, week after week after week, has to be stuck wrestling Bo Dallas and Curtis Axel, who have never been positioned on the show as being anything, you know, worth getting too excited over. So now, what do? We already had Balor beat Dallas. We had Balor beat Axel. I know. We'll take Dallas and Axel, and will put them together in a handicap match against Balor. And as if that isn't bad enough, he can't even handle the two of them. They're beating him down. He needs Hideo Itami to come out to save him. Hideo Itami came out, ran down to the ring. This was his Raw debut, his main roster debut after all these years. He runs down to make the save. And it's funny, and a couple of you pointed this out to me, and I remembered this. Balor debuted in a very similar way in NXT. He came to Itami's aid against the Ascension, if you remember. But they came back from break, and we had ourselves a tag team match with Balor and Itami against the Miztourage. Itami pinned Axel with the go-to-sleep. Crowd did not react much to Itami at all here. It was kind of depressing, honestly. Not surprising at all, but just still very depressing. I watched his 205 Live debut the next night against Colin Delaney. They brought back Colin Delaney again. This guy's getting more work now than he has in 10 years. I shouldn't say that. I'm sure he's been working indies for the last 10 years. But I saw the debut, and honestly, it wasn't much better. It was not much better. Now, they did exactly the right thing with him. They put him in there against a job guy. They let him beat the crap out of him and kick the hell out of him. You know, it's like when Asuka debuted, I said they shouldn't have debuted her in these competitive matches against Emma, especially if Emma was just going to be released 2 weeks later. They should have debuted her the way that they eventually went, which is putting her in there with jobbers and having her pick the wings off like a fly. So Itami is the same thing. They should start him out by letting him go in there and beat the hell out of people. So they did that the right way. But the people just didn't care. They did not care. And when he hit the GTS on Delaney, he got chance of CM Punk from the crowd. Man, that now imagine that. That for him has got to be irritating as all hell. When you consider it was Punk who stole the move from him. Now he finally gets to hit it in WWE and they're chanting CM Punk at him. But I think it's going to be a real uphill battle for this guy. I mean, that shoulder injury may have been the death blow, honestly, for his career. It cost him what almost surely would have been an NXT title win over Kevin Owens in Japan at that Beast in the East special. I am convinced that were it not for that shoulder injury, they were building to Itami and Owens, not Balor and Owens. So it almost surely cost him a championship win in Japan. It killed all the momentum he had built up. I remember this great video package they put together because they gave him the guest spot that year at WrestleMania. I guess technically you could say that was his main roster debut, and not this week, but you know, they gave him the spot in the Andre the Giant Memorial Battle Royal at WrestleMania 31. And the way they treated him there was a joke. I mean, they had Big Show basically just toss him out like a sack of trash. But I remember this great video package they put together. We got to follow him around for a day. We got to, you know, they showed his kids in the video. And we got to learn a little bit more about him. And I remember coming out of that thinking, he is just as sympathetic a figure as you can find. This is great. I mean, you show people this video. How can they not root for this guy? And then I think it was May of that year. He had the shoulder injury. And nobody really knew how serious it was. He was out a long time. And when he was supposed to come back, there were some complications. He might have needed a second surgery. It kept him out even longer. It was something like 18 months that this guy was out for. And it just completely killed all of the momentum that he had built up. And then you consider the physical aspect of it. He just hasn't been the same guy. He has not looked like the same Hideo Itami since he came back. I mean, he surely does not look like the same Kenta that, you know, if you go back and watch old footage and old matches of him in Japan. I mean, I know he was younger. I'm not even talking about the age. You look at him then and now, it's like two different people. But you go back and look at him even from his early NXT run, and it's just, he's not the same. And I'm sorry to say it, but I really feel like he missed his window. Cedric Alexander pinned Drew Gulak with the lumbar check to become number one contender for Enzo's Cruiserweight title. The Revival made their return. Speaking of injuries, they've been snake bitten by injuries themselves. They beat Heath Slater and Rhino. Woken Matt Hardy was playing a game of chess this week against a goldfish, which sounds about right. Apparently, the goldfish was actually Napoleon Bonaparte, only in a smaller vessel. He mentioned their battle at the Loo of Water, which I thought was funny. It took me a second, but then I kind of realized what he was talking about. He said, "Sister Abigail must be stopped," and then he chanted, "Delete," a bunch of times, and he laughed. I thought this was better than what they did the week before. I still want to see him interacting with total strangers outside the arena. I just think there's gold in those segments. especially if they don't clue those people in on what's going on. They really do think this guy is a madman. It's like they just let him loose on the streets. I don't even think you need WWE cameras. Let him use his own camera. Like, go with the amateur look, you know what I mean? Like they kind of did when they were filming their own stuff in TNA, and just let him go on the street and see what he can come up with. I think it could be a lot of fun. Main event was Bayley, Mickey James, and Sasha Banks against Absolution. They wrestled all of 3 minutes. Ref called for the DQ. They were beating down Sasha 3-on-1. Nia Jax came out to make the save and attack Absolution. She stacked Mandy Rose and Sonya Deville on her shoulders and hit a double Samoan drop. Paige chop blocked Nia, took her down. Then Alexa Bliss, Alicia Fox, Asuka, they all come running out to make the save. Now keep that in mind, okay? Keep that in mind, the fact that the entire roster is against Absolution. Okay, Paige and her friends have been terrorizing the roster since their debut. Keep that in mind for when Stephanie McMahon walks out. Out comes Stephanie, everybody freezes like a deer in headlights, like they saw a ghost. Stephanie then launches into this whole spiel about how the women's revolution became the women's evolution. And she says they're going to make history once again, because on January 28th, we're going to have the first ever Women's Royal Rumble match. And all of the women start applauding and doing the yes chant, including Absolution. So they're all best friends now. You got Stephanie out there acting like the mother hen, and these are all her little babies. Absolutely nauseating. Absolutely nauseating. If they pat themselves on the back any harder, they may burp themselves. One of the best parts of Raw all year, since I'm going to do year in review stuff next week, I'll get a jump on it here. One of the best parts of Raw all year was Stephanie not being there for most of it. Absolutely one of the worst characters on television on this show in the last 5 years. I'm gonna name my remote control Stephanie, because it's the first thing I reach for when she comes on my TV. My first impulse is to either hit the mute button or change the channel. As far as the ladies go, good for them. They've done Money in the Bank. They've done Hell in a Cell. No reason for them not to try out at least one time, you know, the Royal Rumble. I mean, there's no reason to think this won't become an annual thing. I just think it's more a matter of where you place it on the show, the length of the match, how it affects the overall layout of the show. But I'm sure the Rumble's going to be, what, 4 hours? All these big pay-per-views now are 4 hours with the pre-show. My guess, they haven't announced this yet, but my guess is they'll probably do the 2-hour pre-show. So you're probably going to have 6 hours of the Royal Rumble next month. So the whole issue of, well, is there going to be time? Yeah, there probably will be plenty of time. Whether it's a 15-woman rumble, a 20-woman rumble, a 30-woman rumble, you got 6 hours to play with. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be plenty of time. Although, watch them go ahead and put it on the pre-show. I don't think they would do that, but I put nothing past these people. So, again, they've done all these other things. So why not do a women's rumble match? WWE issued a press release stating that the winner of the women's rumble will earn a championship match at WrestleMania 34. A championship opportunity. That's how they phrased it. Not a match. It's an opportunity. So maybe they'll play a game of horseshoes. Maybe a game of bingo, perhaps, to determine who will be the next champion. I don't know. Championship opportunity is what they said. No word on exactly how many participants they're planning on having. How many from Raw, how many from SmackDown, how many surprises, anybody from NXT. They've said nothing about this, probably because they don't know. Now, when I pitched the idea many, many weeks ago of a women's rumble, I think the number I gave was 15. I figured maybe 7 from each brand, one woman from NXT. I figured Paige would win the title from Alexa at the rumble. Asuka wins the rumble, and you do Paige and Asuka at Mania, assuming that Charlotte and Sasha and all of them would be off doing the horsewomen stuff. So you could do two totally separate things with the women. You could do your horsewomen tag team match that they started teasing, you know, a few months ago. And you can build to a women's championship match, whoever the Rumble winner is, against their respective brand's champion. So you have those two big things with the women to promote for WrestleMania. Now, there's talk about maybe Ronda Rousey getting a singles match and wrestling either Charlotte or Asuka at WrestleMania. Now, I'm fine with either one of those matches. And I think Rousey wrestling for the first time anyway, I think that's going to be a big deal no matter what you do with her, whether it's a singles match or a tag team match. It's going to be a big deal. But now, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet, they had a story up last night, it sounds like Rousey may not even be at the Rumble because she may be in Bogota filming scenes for a movie with Mark Wahlberg. So I don't know what the hell is going on, to be honest with you. I have no idea. And it sounds like they don't know either. They would like to have Ronda there, but it sounds like nothing is signed, and they're just waiting to find out what's going to... And it may be an 11th hour thing where they find out, hey, she wants to do it, she'll be available, and Ronda ends up being just a quick surprise. And they don't even factor her into WrestleMania plans, because if she can't commit, how can you plan? So, again, I don't know what's going on with her. It's very much up in the air, it sounds like, right now, but it's going to be up to her. It sounds like they're all in on having her in the Rumble or at the Rumble if she wants to be there, but if she's in another country, then that's a problem. Now, tomorrow night is the first ever live Christmas edition of Raw. In the past, they've had tape shows. Sometimes they do year-in-review type shows. This is the first time that Raw will be live from the arena on Christmas Day. And USA has announced that the first hour of both Raw and SmackDown this week will air commercial-free. This is very cool. Now, if only they had announced an abbreviated 90-minute edition of Raw, that would have truly been a great Christmas present. I saw the clip from 205 Live after the match with Kalisto and Grand Metalik against Brian Kendrick and Jack Gallagher. This really pissed me off when I heard about this story. Kalisto's laying there. Match is over. Kalisto is laying outside the ring, and some dingbat throws a water bottle. It ricocheted off the floor, and it smacked Kalisto right in the face, right in the mouth. And this person, whoever it was, they threw it from a great distance. Somebody was there sitting just to the right of this guy, and he was either in one of the suites, or he was in a row just below where the suites would be. So this did not come from somebody at ringside. This did not come from somebody in the first 5 or 10 rows. This came from way back. This guy should be on the Mets with a throw like that. And then hopefully they could all gang up and beat the hell out of him. Kalisto's mouth was just a bloody mess. His wife went off on the person on Instagram and said that he had to get stitches. He had to go get an MRI. He may have a possible fracture. She didn't say of what. I would guess a tooth probably. I don't know what else would be fractured. He posted a picture of his lip. He kind of pulled his lip up and took a picture of it. It's nasty as all hell, all bruised up. You're a special kind of shithead to throw a water bottle at somebody, especially a full water bottle. And I don't even care if he was aiming for him or not. Although, to argue you weren't aiming for the guy would be pretty... That'd be a stretch given how dead-on this thing nailed him. But it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. You throw something like that. I mean, it's like people who throw batteries at wrestlers or glass bottles. Shawn Michaels got hit in the head with a battery when they did that outdoor event in Boston to promote WrestleMania 14, remember? And Austin was there and Tyson was there. And so Tyson's in the ring, I think, with DX. They're just, and then he gets hit in the head with a battery. He walked out. He left. And you know what? I don't blame him. Go try that shit on Brock Lesnar and see what happens. Remember when Cesaro tore that beach ball to shreds at SummerSlam? I imagine that if somebody threw a bottle at Brock, that would be what he would do to that person. Only it would be their internal organs that he would tear to shreds and not some beach ball. I think they found the person who did it. That's what I had read. I hope they did. I hope they prosecute them. Because that's assault. They need to have zero tolerance for these things. SmackDown from Tuesday. The Daniel Bryan-Shane McMahon angle continued here on this show. Shane confronted Bryan about his actions at Clash of Champions. Bryan said he was protecting Shane from himself when he fast counted and handed the win to Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Crowd chanted, "Thank you, Daniel," which Shane looked like he wasn't expecting. But you just got to roll with it. That's how it goes. Bryan called Shane a hothead, said that, you know, we had a shared vision for SmackDown when we started out here, but if that vision has changed, then maybe you should just fire me. And Shane did not take him up yet. Did not take him up on that offer. I like how Daniel Bryan is not only trying to get fired in real life, now he's trying to get fired in storyline as well. So this is all to be continued. The story continues. The story rolls on, as Michael Cole would say. According to the website isdanielbryanclear.com, which is a real site, he is still not cleared. I will keep checking back there daily to see if that changes. Chad Gable and Shelton Benjamin beat the Usos in a non-title match, which sets them up for a championship match. You know, after Gable's performance at Clash of Champions, I mentioned this in my review. I didn't mention it earlier, but Chad Gable was awesome in that tag team match. They let him shine there for a few minutes towards the end, all the rolling Germans and everything. The guy is impressive as all hell. And I'm able to look past his size because I know this guy is real good. Some people may not be able to get past the fact that, hey, he's a small guy. Whatever. I mean, to me, if you got it, you got it. Doesn't matter if you're 5'8" or 6'8". Daniel Bryan, he had it. There are just some guys who aren't the biggest guys in the world, but they have something about them, or they're just that good, or that much fun to watch, that you can look past it, and they get over in spite of being big and jacked. And I hope Chad Gable turns out to be one of those guys. It's nice to see them focusing more on him getting something of a push now, and I hope it continues, because I think he could go a lot further than he's going right now. I mean, the tag team thing with Shelton is great. He could do this for a while yet, but I think whether it's later in 2018 or 2019, at some point, I think you've got to try to go higher with him, because I think he, like Jordan on Raw, Jason Jordan is not there yet, but I could see that, you know, he's doing okay for himself. I think he's slowly adapting to the role. He's getting better each week. 6 months from now, a year from now, we may look at him as truly being one of the top guys on that Raw brand if they play their cards right with him and they don't screw it all up. The guy's an athletic freak. That's why they picked him. Well, I mean, there's other reasons, I'm sure, why. I'm sure Vince took one look at him and said, hey, you know, he's our guy. But him and Gable both. And I said this a long time ago. Might have been a mailbag question somebody asked me, like a buy or sell or something. But I said this a long time ago, you know, who do you see being the Jannetty of the team? And I said, I don't see a Jannetty of the team. I think both of these guys could at some point go on to become headliners. They could end up having a WrestleMania match one day. Maybe not the main event, or maybe it is. But at some point, I'd like to see Gable and Jordan be big enough where at WrestleMania 35 or 36 or 37, we see them in the ring having a singles match, and they're two of the biggest stars in the company. I think the potential is there. I don't look at one over the other as the Jannetty. I don't look at Gable because he's smaller, and Jordan is the one getting the big singles push right now. Oh, well, I guess Gable's the Jannetty. Let me tell you something. If Chad Gable turns out to be the Marty Jannetty of this team, that's on WWE. That's not on Chad Gable. That's going to be on the company if they can't find something bigger for this guy to do at some point. Because the potential is definitely there. Naomi announced herself as the first entrant into the Women's Royal Rumble match. Charlotte and Naomi then beat Ruby Riott and Sarah Logan. Rear view to Logan for the win. So that is the Riott Squad's first loss here on SmackDown. Well, look, not everybody can be undefeated, right? Not every faction has to go undefeated. At some point, you got to lose. It's inevitable. Dolph Ziggler was scheduled to have a United States Championship celebration coming off his big win, his shocking win at Clash of Champions. Instead, he came out, he played clips of all of his greatest hits, including his Money in the Bank cash-in on Alberto Del Rio the night after WrestleMania 29, when he won the world title. Still, the loudest reaction to anything I've ever attended live was when he hit the zigzag, the referee counted three, and that building absolutely exploded. The building physically shook. Physically shook at that moment when he won the world title. He then said, "We don't deserve him." And he dropped the U.S. title on the mat, and he walked to the back. Now, I don't know if the title is supposed to be declared vacant now or what. But they do really have to put vacant, by the way, in the Hall of Fame. He deserves a spot. I don't know where the story is going, but hopefully it's more interesting than this segment was. It's going to take more than one match and a championship win to get me to care about this guy again. Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods, dressed up in these ridiculous Christmas costumes, beat Santa Rusev and Aiden English. It's the new day, so comedy is to be expected. Rusev is always funny, so I found this amusing enough. New Day had brought a plate of pancakes to the ring with them. It was on the announce desk. Aiden English goes up to it. He starts spraying a shit ton of whipped cream on top of the pancakes. He goes to put the New Day's face in it, but English ends up going face first into the pancakes, which actually sounds amazing. I don't know why he was so upset. I wish somebody would put my face in a plate of pancakes. I would thank them for it. I would ask them, thank you, sir, can I have another? There is absolutely nothing to be upset about if somebody puts your face in a plate of pancakes. Just ask for some syrup. Xavier then hit a springboard elbow drop off the ropes onto Aiden English for the win. Now, I was fine with all of this until right after the pin, when the camera caught Xavier Woods starting to very slowly spit pancakes out of his mouth onto Aiden English's face. That was fucking gross. And the camera cut away quickly, so they probably didn't want that on camera. But that was seriously disgusting. If he did that to me, I don't know what I would do. I think I would just lose my shit and go off on the guy. That's just absolutely disgusting. Main event was AJ Styles, Randy Orton, and Shinsuke Nakamura beating Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, and Jinder Mahal. Phenomenal forearm to Owens. Nakamura finished Zayn off with the Kinshasa for the win. Not a whole lot to it, just a feel-good moment with the baby faces going over at the end of the show. I thought overall the show was fine. It feels like we're in this dead zone until we get closer to the Rumble, and that's really when things start to pick up. And look, no matter how disenfranchised you may be with the WWE right now, and a lot of people are, I am too, the Royal Rumble is still one of my favorite shows of the year. That and the 25th anniversary of Raw stuff. It sounds like they got a lot of cool stuff planned for that show. Two different locations. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. That should be good stuff. We just have to get through these next 4 weeks. And then once we get to that 25th anniversary show and the Rumble, we're kind of off to the races. Now look, I know how badly they've screwed the Rumble up before. 2014, 2015, you don't have to remind me. I went off on that here on this show. So you think to yourself, man, it would take a lot of effort to screw up the Royal Rumble. But somehow they found a way to do it before. So yes, if you are worried about that, you have every reason and every right to be worried about that, or this idea that Roman Reigns might win the Rumble or John Cena might win the Rumble. And there's a lot of rumor, by the way, that John Cena may win the Royal Rumble. That they want to tell this story of John Cena winning one more Rumble and going on to WrestleMania to win championship number 17. It's not a story I want to see play out at WrestleMania. I do not want to see John Cena win that Royal. I want to see John Cena win the Royal Rumble less than I do Roman Reigns. I don't want to see either one of them win the Royal Rumble. So I hope that's just a rumor and nothing more. It's just an idea that maybe they briefly thought about and moved on from, because that's the last thing I want to see at the Rumble next year. But I still look forward to the show. It's still a lot of fun to do the countdown and wonder who's coming out next and all that. So, you know, if you are disenfranchised, hang in there. Just get through these next few weeks. And, well, we got Wrestle Kingdom coming up too. But even after that, hopefully things will really start to pick up when we get to the end of January. Because right now, I don't know. There's just not a whole lot to get excited for right now.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
According to PW Insider, word going around the WWE Performance Center this week is that three members of the incoming class of NXT stars will include Ricochet at long last and War Machine from Ring of Honor, Hanson and Rowe. I kind of feel like the Bludgeon Brothers act debuting on SmackDown takes a little bit of steam away from these guys if they did want to bring them up to the main roster right away. I feel like their acts are just a little too similar. But their final non-WWE date is Wrestle Kingdom at the Tokyo Dome. Ricochet, as far as he goes, he can be the star of that entire NXT brand if they want him to be. I mean, he'd be the top star on 205 Live easily. But if Finn Balor doesn't need to be a cruiserweight, then to me, neither does Ricochet. You know what I mean? Like, there's absolutely no reason to limit this guy just to the division. But then again, you know, if they're serious about making those 205 Live tours a success, headlining with Ricochet on those cards, once they establish him on TV, because not everybody is going to know who he is, it could be a nice little boost for them. I could see them wanting to do that. So I don't know what they're going to do. If it were up to me, I don't put him in the cruiserweight division because I think he could do... Honestly, I think he could do much better and be more valuable as an asset in NXT Because guys are always coming and going in NXT. He goes to NXT. He's gonna be a top star. There's no doubt about it. I think he'll generate a lot of enthusiasm. I think it'll be good for business for NXT and those takeover shows. So even though he doesn't necessarily need to be there for any extended period of time, you want to show him camera angles and some stuff. There's no reason for him to be there longer than a couple of months. I mean, we've had guys like Sami Zayn and Finn Balor be down there for 2-3 years. I think it'd be a complete waste to keep him down there for that long. But I do think he should hit NXT first. And then when they have an actual spot outside of the Cruiserweight division open for him on the main roster, you know, they can ship him off to Raw or SmackDown, wherever they have a hole that they need to fill. But in any event, that's the latest on the incoming class. We'll see if that pans out. But the Ricochet thing has been rumored for a while now. Obviously, he's not going back to Lucha Underground. We know that. WWE always seemed like the most likely destination for him. This week's NXT show may have been the best all year. And it just so happens to be one of the last shows of the year. This was the best hour of NXT, maybe the best hour of WWE television in months and months and months. Actually, it was an hour plus. The show went an hour and 12 minutes. It was funny because when the main event started, it looked like they only had about 10 or 11 minutes left. And I like how they went over that. It was kind of a nice little surprise. That doesn't happen very often. But just an excellent show. The Undisputed Era has its first taste of gold in WWE. Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly beat Eric Young and Killian Dane of Sanity to win the NXT Tag Team titles. Alexander Wolfe still has staples in his head from War Games, so that's why Dane was in there with EY. Dane was killing these guys. He was just a monster in there until Eric Young tagged in. And then, of course, then it all went south. The heel started to work over his shoulder. Killian Dane finally got the hot tag and ran wild. He tagged Eric Young back in. That was his second mistake. He went up for the elbow, but Adam Cole ran down, tripped him up. Nikki Cross came from out of nowhere, running off the apron, dove onto Adam Cole, started pummeling him. He was covering up, trying to shield himself, and she got dragged out. Dane then gets run into the post by Adam Cole. EY comes flying out of the ring with a dive onto Cole, but when he rolls back inside, Fish and O'Reilly are waiting for him, and they hit their total elimination finish for the win. And new NXT Tag Team Champions, Red Dragon. Now, they may not call them that, but I still do. So, a good match with the title change, and that was just the opener of the show. That then brought us to Lars Sullivan and Roderick Strong to determine the final spot in the Fatal 4-Way next week, to determine a new number one contender for the NXT Championship. This was even better than the opener. This was the best Lars Sullivan match to date. I like this a lot more than the match he had with Cassius Ohno at the last TakeOver show. Roddy wasted no time in going after this guy. As soon as the bell rang, Roddy just went right after him. Sullivan was having none of it. This match was basically one long Hulk smash with intermittent comebacks from Roddy. Lars went up top at one point. Roddy caught him, hit him with a superplex, and Strong went for the cover, but Sullivan did the power kick out at one. Sullivan murdered him with a lariat, but then Strong rises from the dead, hits an angle slam for a near fall. Roddy tried, you know, he was the resilient babyface. He kept trying, but it was too much. Sullivan hit the freak accident for the pin. I love the way they're building this guy. Him in the ring with Killian Dane, Johnny Gargano, and Aleister Black. It sounds like a hell of a match. You got four distinctly different people here in this match. I'm going to stick with my pick from the post-takeover review I did back in November. When I was, you know, after Drew McIntyre lost the championship and Andrade won it, and I'm thinking, well, who makes sense? If Drew is out and he's hurt and he can't wrestle for many months, who gets the next shot? Who does he wrestle at the next takeover show? And you remember the first idea, the first name I floated was Johnny Gargano. He could be an interim challenger. You could do the heartbreak at the very end with Tommaso Ciampa if he's ready, interfering, costing Johnny the... It's actually a fantastic story. If Ciampa is ready to at least do a run-in, if he could at least do that with the idea that by WrestleMania he'll be ready to wrestle and they can do a match in New Orleans, you can't conceive of a more perfect story given that Ciampa turned on him and they played that thing out great. I thought the way they did that heel turn with him was fantastic. And then he came out on NXT the following week and cut that big promo on Johnny. And Johnny was just absolutely destroyed by this whole... He was betrayed by his best friend. He went on this losing streak. He was down in the dumps. He just couldn't get it going. So finally, his luck begins to change, right? He manages to get himself into this fatal four-way. If he wins this fatal four-way, he goes on to get a championship match. The whole world is going to be behind this guy. And you go to Philadelphia, which I'm sure will be a rabid crowd. I'm sure those two will have a great match. They've already had a couple of great matches. They have great chemistry. And to cap off this great match, and Gargano is this close to winning the championship for Ciampa of all people. When Johnny is about to redeem himself, for him to come out and cost him the championship, I can't think of a bigger heel in this entire company, in the entire wrestling industry, if he does this, than Tommaso Ciampa. It's perfect. So I hope that's the way they're going to go with this. I suppose they could go with Aleister Black. You know, again, I'm not giving away any spoilers here for this match next week. But I'm sticking with my original prediction that Gargano gets it in January, the shot, not the title, and then Aleister Black goes to New Orleans WrestleMania weekend, and Aleister Black is the man to beat Andrade Cien Almas and become the champion. And then it was time. Pete Dunne defends his WWE United Kingdom Championship against the former champion Tyler Bate. These two had an excellent match in the UK tournament in January. They topped it with an even better match in May at TakeOver in Chicago. My pick for match of the year in WWE. I know I'm giving away my pick. I said I'm going to do my top 10 matches of the year in WWE next week on the show. I've been saying it for so long. It's not even a spoiler at this point. You guys know what my pick is for match of the year. I'm not even going to try to hide it. The question was, would these guys top that match? Would my match of the year pick stay Dunn and Bate from May? Or could they top that match here on the second-to-last episode of the year in NXT? That was really the only question. This was the rubber match. One of the things I loved about the early part of this match was the... Well, I mean, there were multiple things. One thing was how they traded momentum back and forth. They were kind of feeling each other out. But Dunn got Tyler Bate all out of sorts. He got him upset at one point, and the referee had to step in to back off Tyler Bate. Tyler Bate lost his cool. And the camera picked up this great shot of Pete Dunne as the referee is pushing Tyler back. It got this great shot of Dunne cracking a smirk. Like he had realized he got him, right? This guy had been gotten to. It's just, I don't know, it's little things like that that Pete Dunne is so good at that make him such a great heel. That and the way he works over the fingers and the hands, it's just such a simple thing, but it gets a reaction every time. I mean, ask yourself this question. There are guys that go out there and absolutely kill themselves. They do all these dives and these fancy moves and flips. And Pete Dunne goes out there. He's not a flashy guy. He goes out there. He's bending fingers backwards. He's contorting their arms and their wrists. And he's doing all of these very basic things. And it gets a reaction every single time. Why? Because everybody can relate to how much it hurts to get your fingers bent backwards. It's no fun. It's very easy for people to understand. So at one point, Dunn, he bent Bate's hand backwards and he held it down on the mat and he stomped on Bate's elbow. It was sickening. Bate sold it great, like his fingers were dislocated. He needed a second. He's trying to pop him back in. We got the airplane spin spot from Bate, which is always fun to see. I'll never forget the crowd giving these two a standing ovation in Chicago for an airplane spin. I don't think I've ever seen an airplane spin get a standing ovation before in mid-match, but they did. Back in May, they managed to pull it off. Dunn hit his bitter end finish for a near fall. Bate hit the Tyler Driver 97 finish for a near fall later on. They traded lariats. They turned each other inside out. I was going nuts for this. Bate went for a German suplex off the top rope, but Dunn basically backflipped out of it, landed on his feet, and then hit the bitter end again for the win. I cannot say enough good things about this match. And if the reports about that fatal four-way on the NXT episode are true, next week we may be in for the best back-to-back string of NXT main events all year. And it's the final two shows of the year, no less. They saved the best for last. As far as the match goes, I put this match just a shade below their TakeOver match, even though this was longer. This match was almost 10 minutes longer than the match in Chicago. I like that one a little bit more. It's kind of like the whole debate over Shawn and The Undertaker. WrestleMania 25, WrestleMania 26. Which do you prefer? Which match did you like more? Obviously, the match in Arizona, which was the match at 26, had the stipulation of Shawn would retire if he lost. So that added a little bit of drama to the match, but I still prefer 25 over 26. But if you prefer 26 over 25, it's okay. You're not going to get any argument out of me. There were two excellent matches. It's kind of the same thing here. If you thought this match was better this week than the matches they had earlier in the year, I won't argue with you. But I think it's safe to say that either way, Pete Dunne and Tyler Bate deserve Match of the Year honors in WWE, whether it be for this match or the match they had back in May. You cannot go wrong picking either of those two matches, either of their last two matches. Just an excellent trilogy. It is scary how good these two are, as young as they are. Think about this. I knew Tyler Bate was born in 97. I had to look up Pete Dunne. But think about this. Dunne wasn't even born. He wasn't even on this earth until after Ludwig Borga became a thing in WWE. And Bate, he was born the same month that Bret Hart and Steve Austin had their famous WrestleMania match. I don't know about you, that makes me feel really old. Point is, that wasn't that long ago. They're very, very young. You know, if their bodies don't break down, as young as they are, they could go another 15, 20 years. Scary to think about. Now, Tyler in our Facebook group, not Bate, said that he was at the tapings and they put these guys on second or third to last after taping a few shows, and so that might help explain why the crowd seems so dead. That's the only sort of negative, if I could even say there's a negative about the match. The crowd was just completely dead. They won them over as the match went on towards the end, but they were on their phones, they were just, you know, sitting on their hands. TNA used to have that problem a lot when they would tape multiple shows at the Impact Zone. You'd get to taping number three or four, and all of a sudden people are like, all right, I'm over this. But I think this match in front of any other crowd, bigger building, building of the same size, any other crowd, the building would have been rocking for this match. So Full Sail really let me down this week. Thankfully, they're out of Full Sail for the first taping of the new year next Thursday. Not this Thursday, next Thursday, they're going to be taping TV from Center Stage in Atlanta, which is where they used to tape the old WCW Saturday Night Show. So a little bit of nostalgia going back to the old stomping grounds there. So remember on last week's show, I did a segment on a random passage somebody tweeted out from Jushin Thunder Liger's book where he talks about why he's not on social media and how I don't understand why people post pictures of their food. It's hot. It's going to get cold. Just eat your food. And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah, Jushin Liger. Well, the very next day, who should open up a Twitter account but Jushin Thunder Liger? And he's already posting pictures of his food. I'm very disappointed in this man. You can follow him, by the way, if you want to on Twitter, at Liger_NJPW. As far as I know, that's his official account. I don't think he has a little blue check mark yet, but it looks like it really is him. Let's get to your mailbag questions. If you have them, you could always email them to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. This is the Christmas mailbag here for 2017. And we begin with David from Sacramento. Now the WWE is officially having a Women's Royal Rumble. I wanted to ask for your opinion of how the Women's Rumble should go. This is my 30-woman list. Let me stop you there. First of all, I don't think they should have 30 women in this Rumble. Not unless they plan on having 1 minute intervals for this match. They could do that if it's every 60 seconds somebody new comes out. That way you probably end up having a 35 to 40 minute rumble, which isn't too bad. Honestly, even then, I still wouldn't do 30. I would do half that. 20, I'm willing to meet you halfway and do 20. I think 20 is fine. Look, even the first men's Royal Rumble match back in 88 only had 20 guys in it. I just feel like 30 is overkill. When they have fewer women on the roster than they do men. They have far more men than women, and they only do 30 men. I'm not even sure they have 30 women, and I've seen people say, well, you could just pad it. You could just put all these surprises in it. How many surprises? Before you water the whole thing down. I think 20 is a perfectly acceptable number. Anyway, this is his list of who David would have in the Rumble. I thought it was interesting. Some interesting names on here. Figured I would just pick his email and run this down. Becky Lynch, he says, starts the Rumble and is in it the longest. Okay, I got no problem with that. Absolution and the Riot Squad, Faction Face-Off. Fine with me. Ember Moon, Billy Kay, and Peyton Royce to represent NXT. I have no problem having at least one person, maybe two at the most, from NXT in this thing. I really would keep it to one person from NXT. I think doing multiple debuts is just a bad idea. You start getting into, let's have three, four different people, and this is all their first appearance on the main roster. I don't think that that's something they should be doing. I think you keep it to one NXT person. And it doesn't have to be a surprise either. I think it's something you could build on NXT television, whether it's over the course of a few weeks, like a little mini tournament or a battle royal. But why not use it to promote a big episode of NXT where the winner gets a slot in the first ever Women's Royal Rumble? That's a big deal. I don't think you should just throw somebody out there from NXT as a surprise, because you're going to have other surprises in the Rumble. You're going to bring back at least one or two old names. I'm all for surprises. I don't think the NXT person has to be a surprise. I think you can actually have a match and build it up on NXT TV and let somebody earn their way into the Rumble. I mean, I hate this when they just sort of debut them and there's no explanation. Why are they debuting in the Rumble? That happened with Rusev. Remember Alexander Rusev one year? He's in the Rumble. Why? I don't remember him qualifying to get in there. Why did they pick him over everybody else on that roster? What makes him so special? I mean, if I were on the NXT roster, I'd be pissed, right? But if he won a match, if he earned his way in, that's fine. Anyway, the Bella Twins, Victoria, Alundra Blaze, and Caitlyn as filler surprise entrance. Well, Medusa just had knee replacement surgery, so I would think it's safe to say she's out. Again, I think a couple of surprise returns is fine. We don't need half a dozen. If you just said it yourself, filler. That's the problem with these Royal Rumble matches. Too much filler. One of the many reasons why we don't need 30 women in this Rumble. Trish Stratus to either team or brawl with Mickey James. I am fine with Trish being in the Rumble as a surprise. I kind of half expect her to be in there. Her and Mickey going at it would be cool, you know, calling back to their WrestleMania match from many years ago. I think Lita as a surprise, another surprise in the Rumble to fight Trish, or at least do that one sort of face-off in that one big spot with the two of them. I like that idea more. So having Trish and Lita in the Rumble as two of the big surprises makes a lot of sense to me. Let's see, David says James Ellsworth, the first man ever in the Women's Rumble to be eliminated by Carmella. It's comedy relief, whatever, it's fine. I mean, they do a comedy spot in the Rumble every year anyway, so if they want Ellsworth to be the comedy relief in the Women's Rumble, I have no problem with that, that's fine. And then Ronda Rousey, he says, to be the last one eliminated, and Asuka wins the whole Rumble match. So, Asuka winning is fine. I pitched her to win when I laid out my own plan a few weeks ago, right? I just talked about this earlier, so you get no argument out of me. If you want Asuka to win the Rumble, by all means, she should. Unless Ronda Rousey is in the Rumble. Now, here's the thing with Rousey. Rousey being the last one eliminated is okay, but only if it's at the hands of Charlotte and Sasha and Becky and those guys. If it's done to set up the Horsewomen tag team match for WrestleMania, then that's cool. That's great. If not, and it looks like it may not be happening now, because A, Rousey may not even be at the Rumble, and B, they're hyping the debut of Shayna Baszler separately in NXT. They've been airing video packages now for her for weeks, so she's probably going to be off doing her own thing. Maybe she's one of the surprise NXT entrants, or maybe she earns her way as a member of the NXT roster into the Rumble match. And so maybe that's how they can kind of get her and Rousey together to do something to set up the Horsewomen thing. I mean, there's a lot of different ways you could go with this, but it's looking increasingly likely that the Horsewomen thing just may not be happening. If Rousey is in the Rumble, okay, and they're not doing the Horsewomen thing, but she's in the Rumble, they would be insane not to have Ronda Rousey win the Royal Rumble. Asuka could win the championship before Mania, in February, let's say, from Alexa Bliss. And they could do Rousey-Asuka in New Orleans for the championship with Asuka going over. And then Ronda puts over the woman at Mania who they're trying to make into a big star. Because I don't care how many times she's been knocked out, how awful she looked in her last one or two fights. Rousey comes from the MMA world. She has a fight background. She is looked at still by a lot of people as being this, you know, this tough person. And I can think of no better way to get Asuka, to get your own person, to get the wrestler over as a tough person by having her beat somebody like Ronda Rousey, whether she submits her or pins her. I almost think she would have to submit her. Would Rousey be willing to tap out to somebody at WrestleMania? I don't know. I mean, she's a big wrestling fan. I would hope she gets it and she's okay with that, but maybe not. You know, some of these people, they're very protective. They're like, oh, you know, I can't submit. I can't tap out. But to me, that would be the ultimate right there. If you want to build to Asuka and Rousey and then you have Rousey put Asuka over, I mean, that would be huge. You know, but that, hey, if I'm the promoter, if I'm the wrestling promoter, that's what I want to see. I don't have a problem paying to bring in a celebrity as long as we can use them to help promote my own person. Isn't that the whole point? I mean, what good does it do them if Ronda Rousey signs a contract for a one-off appearance at WrestleMania and then she beats Asuka or she beats Charlotte? What sense does that make? I mean, it may not matter as much if you put her in there with a heel like Carmella, but that match sucks. Can you imagine Ronda Rousey against Carmella? That match would be absolute shit. You know, it would have to be somebody like a Charlotte or an Asuka. But for either one of them to lose to Ronda Rousey, I think that's a big, big mistake. You know, but again, if she's not signed or if she's in Colombia filming a movie next month, like, you know, I just read the other night, then it's all a moot point. And if Ronda's not in there, then the only one that makes sense to win the Rumble, the only right answer, is Asuka. Ty from Downingtown, Pennsylvania. Is it Downington or Downingtown? Probably Downington. If WWE gave you the power to pick the 2018 Hall of Fame class, who would you choose? Well, I would go with Goldberg as the headliner. He's the rumored headliner. I think that makes sense. Coming off his big run, he's still fresh in people's minds. He is a big name. So Goldberg is the headliner. Vader belongs in the Hall of Fame. The Dudley Boys, they obviously deserve a spot, deserve recognition in the Hall of Fame. William Regal, who was actually rumored last year for the Hall of Fame, and I think he may have been bumped because, I don't know if it was just space constraints or what, but I think Regal deserves a call-up, or a call-up. He's getting called up. I think he deserves the nod for the Hall of Fame. Sable would be my female inductee. I don't care if you like Sable or not. She wasn't a very good wrestler, but she was a huge draw. Huge draw for them in the late 90s. One of the biggest women stars they've ever had. So she deserves a spot in the Hall of Fame. And Rick Martel. I think Rick Martel belongs in there as well. And I would love, you guys know I'm a big Demolition mark. Okay, I would gladly replace the Dudley Boys and put them in a different year and replace them this year with Demolition. I want Demolition in the Hall of Fame. I'm just trying to be realistic here with this list. Because as long as they're part of that concussion lawsuit, which they are, they're not going anywhere. And as far as the celebrity stuff goes, I don't care about the celebrity shit. So, I don't care. So my class would be Goldberg, Vader, the Dudleys, William Regal, Sable, and Rick Martel. Caleb from Kalamazoo, Michigan. As much as I'd love Nakamura to win the Royal Rumble and face AJ Styles at WrestleMania, I just don't think it's going to happen with Vince McMahon making the call. But what if Finn Balor wins the Rumble and uses his opportunity at AJ's WWE title? That way Roman Reigns can win the Elimination Chamber and get his match with Brock, but we get AJ versus Balor again. I feel like they've made it very clear before that you can only go for the championship for the brand you're on. I'm pretty sure they've outright said that before. But they change the rules every single year. They make up the rules as they go along. So, I mean, realistically, they can do whatever they want. I mean, Carmella could come out on one of these joint pay-per-views and cash in on Alexa if she wanted to, right? There's nothing stopping them from doing that. There's no rule book. So I like the idea because Balor's been doing a whole lot of nothing. All of a sudden, if he comes out of nowhere when people aren't expecting it, and he is somebody I think people would cheer for. I don't think they would boo him out of the building like they would Roman or Cena if they won the Rumble. So I like the idea of him getting a big Rumble win and then the match with AJ. You know, they teased after they had their match at No Mercy. Was it No Mercy? No, it wasn't No Mercy. It was TLC. when they had their match at TLC, I think there was talk about, you know, if we have another match, or if these two meet again one day. And they had a hell of a match back in October. I would not mind at all seeing the two of them face off again at WrestleMania for a championship. I think it would be a hell of a match. Of all the Rumble scenarios that I've mapped out in my head and that some of you have sort of pitched to me, there's a few different ones that I like that I wouldn't mind seeing. I think this is one of the less likely ones. But Balor winning and cashing in on AJ? Yeah, I like that idea a lot, actually. Stacy from Oakland, California. A lot of people are pulling for Nakamura to win the Royal Rumble and face AJ at Mania. But what if he lost to a surprise entrant? Neville. That way everybody wins here. You have Nakamura go the distance but end up barely losing out to Neville so you can keep him strong. You give Neville the push he's been wanting and deserves. AJ gets to work with one of the best in-ring performers in the world, and we, the fans, get a dream match we did not know we wanted. I know it's not Nakamura, but I can't think of anyone who would be disappointed in seeing this match. Oh, I could think of a few people. Can you believe me? Probably in the YouTube comment section right now. I could think of more than a few people who probably would be very disappointed in that outcome. You know, it's an interesting little bit of fantasy booking. I will say that much. Neville and AJ Styles at WrestleMania sounds like an incredible match. But why on earth would WWE give Neville the push he's been wanting when he walked out on them? Like, I'm not even saying he didn't have a reason to walk out. I respect the guy for taking a stand. He wasn't happy. He felt he was being underused and marginalized, and he said, peace out. And I have a lot of respect for him for it. But the fact is, it sends the wrong message that if you, you know, walk out on the company because you're in a pissy mood or because you're unhappy about something, and everybody is unhappy about something. But it sends the message that if you're unhappy and you decide to walk out on your contract, on your obligations, hey, they'll reward you with a main event match at WrestleMania. I just think that's a horrible message to send. Sam from Boston, if you had to bring Matt Riddle to WWE, how would you do it? Riddle has said his goal is to retire Brock Lesnar. Would you make that happen? I would love to see Matt Riddle sign with WWE. He's one of those independent guys that I've seen his matches, I've seen his work, I've seen his promos. The guy has a shitload of charisma. I would love to see him in WWE. I know they won't because of the pot stuff. I think that's the one big thing hurting his chances and stopping him from going there. But I just think he's too good not to at some point get a shot. Pot or no pot, pot or not, I think at some point he'll get the shot. And I would bring him into NXT first. I have no doubt he'd get over easily there, and he could be the champion. Let him build his name down there, and then bring him to the main roster. I really like the idea of a Brock Lesnar-Matt Riddle match. You know, the person in the last mailbag question said, Neville and AJ Styles at WrestleMania, it's the match we didn't know we wanted. That's another match I didn't really know that I wanted until I said it, which is Lesnar and Matt Riddle. You know, obviously both of them have the MMA background. They're both very athletic. Letting him retire Brock Lesnar, I don't know about retiring him, but I'll tell you this. You know, if you gave me the choice of top babyface in WWE, if there was a top babyface guy that as promoter I could build around and who I would like to see is the one to beat Brock Lesnar, if you gave me the choice of Roman Reigns or Matt Riddle, I'd go Riddle over Reigns. And it's not because I hate Roman Reigns or I think his matches are bad. He's had some great pay-per-view matches over the last year, over the last 2 years. He even had one at WrestleMania against Brock. But Riddle's just a lot of fun to watch. Riddle's like a machine in there. I really think he could be the next big babyface in that company if they play their cards right. He could also be very cocky and very arrogant, and that could rub people the wrong way. So who's to say he wouldn't end up being a better heel? I don't know. I really think he's got the potential to be that next big thing that people have been waiting for. Until you mentioned it, like I said, I didn't know how much I wanted to see a Brock Lesnar-Matt Riddle match, but I do. Eugene from Singapore, after winning the 2007 Royal Rumble, The Undertaker was given the right to a title match at WrestleMania 23 for John Cena's WWE Championship, Batista's World Heavyweight title, and Bobby Lashley's ECW title. Say Undertaker decided to pull off the surprise of the century by going extreme and challenging Lashley for his ECW title, How would that match compare to the Batista-Undertaker match that we had at WrestleMania? How would that also benefit the ECW brand in the long term? It would have been huge for ECW. Kidding me? To have The Undertaker as part of the ECW roster, it would have been huge. I think Undertaker and Lashley would have been a good match. I don't think it would have been nearly as good as Undertaker-Batista was. Lashley was not the Lashley that you see now in Impact Wrestling. He really wasn't that good back then. He was one of these guys, oh, he has all this potential in the world, but I thought Lashley was just incredibly boring back then. Batista and Undertaker, there's another element to all this. Batista and Undertaker were pissed off going into that show. Once they found out that John Cena and Shawn Michaels were headlining and not them, they were very upset. They felt they deserved to main event the show. So they were very, very motivated. They were extra motivated to go out there and steal the show. So I think that played a role also in how good that match turned out to be. There would have been no such illusions, I think, about an ECW title match going on last at WrestleMania. There would have been no question. Undertaker and Lashley never in a million years would have gone on last that year had they done that match. So I think for all those reasons, I just don't think it would have been as good of a match as we got, which was surprisingly good between Batista and The Undertaker. Batista's one of these guys that, because he always looked all big and jacked, I think people just didn't take him seriously as a wrestler. Or they just looked at him and said, oh, you know, he's a big muscled up guy. He's not that good. He's only getting a push because of his look, which may have been true. But I think Batista doesn't get enough credit for actually being pretty damn good in the ring. And now the stories about him being really, really serious about wanting to come back to WWE, even though all the success he's having in Hollywood, and he just, you know, filmed the second Guardians of the Galaxy movie that came out, and he's got a lot going for him in Hollywood right now. He's trying to build a name in Hollywood. Even Rock stepped away from wrestling for years before he finally came back because he knew he had to separate himself from wrestling, or he had people in his ear telling him, hey, you got to stop doing that wrestling crap and really build your name in Hollywood so people take you seriously. So he took all those years off. Here's Batista who says, look, I'm doing pretty well for myself, but I want to come back, and I don't want to be one of these guys that just comes back and does a one-off at WrestleMania. If I'm coming back, I want to come back for like a year. I want to work all the TVs. I want to work all the house shows. I mean, I respect the hell out of him for that. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for it, because it's not something he has to do, but clearly he has this passion in him for wrestling, and he just can't let it go, and he feels he's got one last good run in him. So, hey, more power to him. He's a big name. I think if you could find a spot for him, then that's great. I don't necessarily want to see him against Triple H, but there's absolutely room for him on the roster. Him and Brock, I mean, you can go a lot of different ways, I think, with a Batista comeback. But I respect him. I respect the guy a lot. Julian from Arizona, do you think WWE should bring back the Slammies the night after WrestleMania, or keep things the way they are with the Hall of Fame? I just keep things as is. I mean, the Slammies work better, I think, as a year-end thing anyway. If you're going to do Superstar of the Year and all, what sense does it make to do that in March, right? Or April? You do it at the end of the year. I think there's enough going on WrestleMania weekend. You don't need two black tie events where the wrestlers are all dressed up. They already have that with the Hall of Fame. This is the second year in a row, by the way, they did not do a Slammy Awards at all. They have seemingly given up on the Slammies, which is probably for the best. I hated the way they did it in recent years, the way they sort of wedged it. They made it a themed Raw episode. I never liked that. I wish they would do it as a network special in a banquet hall the way they did back in the 80s. It's just something completely separate from Raw and SmackDown. I'd say do it in an arena and sell tickets if you want to, but I don't know how many tickets they would sell for a Slammy Awards. I feel like if they were going to do it in a building with an audience, you got to do it in a smaller building, or just do it in a banquet hall. And they usually have silly angles and stuff and all that. It's not meant to be a real award show. I have no problem with them gimmicking the whole thing up. I used to think the Slammies were a lot of fun back in the day, not so much in recent years. Billy in Des Moines, Iowa. A couple of buddies and I have started trying to incorporate wrestling lingo into our daily lives. We've got the idea from listening to Steve Austin's podcast, as we always get a kick out of hearing him use wrestling terms in casual conversations. So, for example, if I can't go out with the guys, I'll tell them my wife is working heel and wants me to stay in. Or if my daughter falls asleep and... or falls, I should say, and scrapes her knee, I'll say she got color hard way. Anyway, me and the fellows were recently talking about going into business for yourself, because we couldn't figure out a way to use that one naturally, and it got us debating which wrestler has gone into business for himself the most over the years. My answer is Kevin Nash. What say you? Nash is a good one. Nash is a good one, especially in WCW. He didn't really seem to give a crap. He sort of just said and did whatever he wanted to. I would throw Scott Hall in there. I would say Scott Hall went into business for himself every bit as much, if not more so, than Nash did in WCW and post-WCW. And that usually wasn't a good thing. But based on the stories I've read about the guy, I'm inclined to go with Bruiser Brody as my answer. You get a lot of divided opinion about Brody. You get people who were friendly with him and are very protective of his reputation and his legacy. He wasn't a bad guy. He looked out for the boys. He looked at all these promoters are crooked, and he had to stand up for himself. And I'm sure a lot of that is true. But, you know, he screwed over a lot of promoters. He would bounce from place to place, territory to territory, and he really did screw over a lot of people. And maybe in some of those situations, he had every right to. I don't know. I wasn't there. But you hear enough stories about him. And Bruiser Brody was somebody who sort of marched to his own drum and did his own thing and, you know, went into business for himself when he felt he had to. So whether or not you think that's a good thing or not, I guess depends on your view of Bruiser Brody. Chris from Elmont, New York. Which uncompleted storyline or angle do you wish had a real conclusion? My favorites would be the Who Kidnapped Samoa Joe and the Winter Angelina Love Drug Zombie angle. How did I miss that? A drug zombie angle in TNA. The Winter Love angle was concluded during a random match between the two on an episode of Impact. The only explanation we received came from Taz on commentary, who said, and I quote, "Well, that ran its course." It was never explained how Angelina snapped out of her trance that Winter put her in. Incomplete storyline that I wish would have seen a conclusion. Well, I mean, when Shane McMahon came back, you know, he confronted Vince in the ring on Raw, right? Remember the whole thing about a lockbox? He had this lock. When he came back and he confronted Vince, he claimed he had a lockbox with something inside that could be very damaging to his father. And the stipulation was that if Shane lost at WrestleMania, he would surrender the contents of that lockbox to Vince McMahon. Now, Shane did lose, but the lockbox was never spoken of again. I mean, I guess by virtue of the stipulation, I mean, I guess it makes sense. Vince doesn't want it to get out, so why would he talk about it? But I don't know. You can't just leave something like that hanging. I feel like they should have come back to that at some point. That's a pretty big storyline hole that they just sort of left open there. You know what I mean? I don't trust that they're going to come back to it in a couple of years either. So I'm still wondering what was in that stupid lockbox. I think of Hideo Itami being attacked in the parking lot in NXT and taken out. We never did find out who attacked him. I always figured it was Kevin Owens. I mean, Owens was the one who came strolling by, right? Remember Kevin Owens came walking by as Hideo was like on the ground, thriving in pain. And didn't he say something like, that's a shame or something, and just kept walking? So I always figured it was Owens, but it was never explained who attacked Hideo Itami. Which, as it turned out to be a hell of an injury because it derailed his entire career. Kept him out for a year and a half. You would think Itami would be pretty pissed off about that and would come back and be looking for revenge. In fact, looking at the way Itami, how his debut was met, you know, with total silence and went over like a fart in church this week, maybe it wouldn't have been such a bad idea when he first came back to have him just on a tear, destroying anybody and everybody, trying to find out who attacked him, who took away 18 months of his career. That at least, like almost like a whodunit type thing, would have been interesting. I feel like Itami, there's just nothing going on there right now, so people just don't care. So maybe they should have thought twice about that and actually brought him back with that story. You know, being very upset about this person who attacked him and took away all this time from his career. And, you know, come up with a satisfying conclusion. Come up with some shocking reveal, you know, about who took him out and why. Maybe it was Balor. They wanted to turn Balor heel, right? It was me. Because when Balor came into NXT, he was friends with Itami. They even teamed up, right, against the Ascension. So, if they ever wanted to turn Finn heel and maybe go do the whole Balor Club thing, put him and the Good Brothers together, that'd be a hell of a way to do it. have him be revealed as the one who attacked Itami and start something between the two of them. I mean, it's too late now, but, you know, I like that idea better than what they've done with him so far. And when I say so far, he's only been on the main roster 1 week. I mean, ever since he came back to NXT, there's just been nothing going on with Hideo Itami. And he's been back for a while now. And I think that they could have at least, you know, come up with something a little interesting for him. So that's another one. You know, I think the Nexus buried the Undertaker once, right? Didn't they bury him alive? I remember David Otunga threatening Wade Barrett. There was some dissension in the ranks, and he threatened Barrett. Like, I'll say why we did what we did to the Undertaker. I'll reveal to the world why. And then nothing ever came of it. Like, those are some of the ones that come to mind. If you're an old WCW fan, you might be thinking of the Hummer angle, the white Hummer. I just didn't give a shit at that point about WCW, so to this day, I really don't care who was in the Hummer. Zach from West Virginia, I've only been into wrestling for 5 years or so, and WrestleMania 30 and 31 hold a special place in my heart. Buy or sell on the better WrestleMania finish. Daniel Bryan beating Orton and Batista for both belts at 30, or Seth Rollins cashing in his briefcase on Roman and Lesnar and becoming champion at 31. Both great finishes. Two great WrestleMania finishes. I would buy on 30 and sell on 31. 31 was better for the shock value, I think, but 30 was just the culmination of something people really genuinely wanted to see. It was this feel-good storybook moment. So, Brian wins out. Dylan from Toronto. We'll end with this. Buy or sell on which behind-the-scenes WWE moment you wish was filmed and the footage leaked to the public. Bret Hart punching out Vince McMahon after the Montreal Screwjob. The Bret Hart-Shawn Michaels backstage bathroom brawl in 1997. The shoot amateur wrestling match between Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle. The fight between Batista and Booker T. The plane ride from hell. Or Joey Styles knocking out JBL. Oh, I gotta buy on Styles knocking out JBL. That's an easy one. I think few things in life would give me more satisfaction than watching Joey Styles, of all people, punch out some drunken bully twice his size. It's funny, too, because, like, apparently JBL, after that happened, like, I don't know if it was the next day or the next week at TV, but, like, apparently he was super quiet in the locker room, like, sitting in a corner minding his own business. I'll bet he was. So, yeah, I'm going to buy on that. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. Check out my TV Tracks Q&A. It is exclusive to his channel. There is no MP3. You have to go to his channel and watch it there. Or go to his channel and rip it. You don't need the MP3 from me. Just rip it if you want it that badly. Either way, you need to go there to hear it. Next Sunday will be my top 10 WWE matches of the year and a look back at some of the biggest stories of 2017, plus my Wrestle Kingdom preview and all the usual news and Q&A. It's going to otherwise be a normal show. I mentioned this on Twitter. I am in the middle of what I'm calling the SVU challenge. I have become a very big fan of Law & Order SVU. Once I was finished with Narcos, I needed some new stuff to watch on Netflix, and I'm looking at some of the original shows, and then I see Law & Order, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's kind of interesting. I never really watched Law & Order. Let me give this a shot. And I am just completely obsessed with this show now. So they only have seasons 14, 15, 16, and 17. I don't know why. Those are the only seasons that they have on Netflix. And I commute to and from work every single day. It's like 2 hours, like 90 minutes to 2 hours back and forth every single day. It's like I need something to, you know, occupy my time. And it's great because the Netflix app has offline downloading. So you could download all these episodes. It doesn't eat your data and just watch them on your commute. So I'm going along and I'm watching a couple of episodes a day. And then I'm like, you know, I wonder when season 18 is going to be added to Netflix. Let me go online and search. Well, it's a good thing I did because season 18 ain't coming to Netflix. In fact, they're removing all of the seasons of SVU from Netflix as of January 1st. Because I guess they're migrating everything over to Hulu. Hulu's going to have the whole series. So they're dumping everything off of Netflix. You know, Netflix rotates shows out. I never would have known if I didn't look it up online. It would have been a rude awakening for me. Let me tell you, on January 1st, to find that out. So I started what I'm calling the SVU Challenge. So when I tweeted the other day, there were 9 days to go, and I had 54, right? I think 55, no, 55 episodes left to watch in 9 days, which is quite the challenge, but I accepted this challenge. Well, now I'm down to 45 episodes, and we have 7 days. So I have 45 episodes left to watch in 7 days to do it in, which is mission impossible, it sounds like, but I'm bound and determined. Now that I got this show out of the way, I can spend the rest of my holiday days off here trying to play catch-up. So that's what I've been occupying my time with here, is my little SVU challenge. Speaking of Law and Order, the Facebook group. Let me just say first, congrats to Wendell and Lewis, our new moderators. Remember, being in the group is a privilege. It is not a right. You are not entitled to be in there. Just be on your best behavior, because if you get kicked, okay, if you get booted, and it probably wouldn't even be by me, it could be, but it could be by one of the other moderators or the other admins, you're not just out of the group, you're out of the Royal Rumble pool. So if you've liked the post and you're in the Rumble pool and you want to be part of it and maybe win a prize, you get kicked, you're out of the pool too. So don't forget to sign up for the pool. All you have to do is like Zach Hulker's post in the group, which I'll pin back up to the top later. If not, you can search for it. Just like the post and you're in. And if you're not in the group at the moment, you can apply for entry. You have to search Solid Monster Sounds Off. It's a private group. You'll have to be approved in order to gain access, so please be patient. And that's all I got. Have yourselves a very Merry Christmas. I will be having the usual Chinese food dinner, which is a Christmas tradition. When I was 10 pounds heavier, it was always lo mein and fried rice. And the last 12 months, it's been chicken and shrimp with cashew nuts steamed, with brown sauce on the side and brown rice. It is delicious. Or as Matt Hardy would say, delicious! Anyway, enjoy. I'll see you back here New Year's Eve, sounding off for the final time in 2017. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solid Monster sounds off.
And there was one moron who tagged me in a tweet. He says, "Smarks like everything from Japan." This guy has a picture of The Rock as his avatar, and he's quoting wrestling catchphrases on his timeline, calling other people marks and smarks when you've got another man as your profile picture and you're quoting Psycho Sid. Sit the fuck down with that nonsense. You don't get to sit at the adult table when you spew nonsense like that. Go stand in the corner and face the wall.
Since 2007, The Solid Monster Sounds Off. Available at thesolidmonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solo Monsters Sound Off.